Good evening, good morning, wherever you may be. Thank you for tuning in to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. I'm your host for the evening. My name is Dave Schrader. Tonight, in Hour 1, Miracles from Heaven, a little girl, her journey to heaven, and her amazing story of healing. No matter what your belief system is, this is an astounding story everyone should tune in for. Then in the last 3 hours of tonight's show, A Sorcerer's Apprentice, A Skeptic's Journey into the CIA's Project Stargate. John Herlowski will be my guest in the last few hours of the show. We'll open up the phone lines for that guest in the fourth hour so you can become a part of the show. Christy Wilson being my guest in the first hour. It's a great show lined up for you. Lots of interesting topics. Thank you for coming along on the ride. We're going to take a quick break, and then we're back to hear about an astounding miracle and a story of healing. That's next on Coast to Coast AM. Christy Beam's young daughter, Annabelle, spent most of her childhood in and out of hospitals with a rare and incurable digestive disorder that prevented her from ever living a normal, healthy life. After a terrible fall that may well have caused death or paralysis, Annabelle claims to have visited heaven and was inexplicably cured of her chronic ailment. The new book is out and available right now, Miracles from Heaven. A little girl, her journey to heaven, and her amazing story of healing. Christy Wilson Beam joining us. Christy, thank you for being with me this evening.
Thank you so much for having me.
What a powerful story. This is just it's a great book. It's a great read. And like I said, just such a powerful, powerful little story. Let's start your story before this all went down and talk to me a little bit about your daughter. At what age did she was she diagnosed with this digestive disorder?
Well, when Annabelle was 4, she started having what we call tummy troubles. And then when she was 5, she fully obstructed abdominally and had 2 abdominal surgeries to release the complete bowel obstructions. And then after that, in the book, I talk about chasing a diagnosis. And we went through quite a journey to get diagnosed with what was later diagnosed pseudo-obstruction motility disorder and then antral hypomotility disorder. And those are just really long words to say that her stomach as a muscle was really weak and floppy, and it didn't have the ability to contract. And the nerves couldn't tell the muscles to squish the food through and out the body.
Now, is this a genetic defect, something that's passed down through family members, or was this something totally out of the blue and random for your family?
Well, yes, to both of those. They say that it is genetically linked, but we could not find a genetic link in our family where Annabelle could have received that connection. So we're not sure where it could have come from. They talk about how Annabelle's started from her appendix had leaked and caused an adhesion, and it's just a crazy journey that Annabelle went through to finally get to what she was later diagnosed as.
You get something like this, and as a parent, I'm a parent myself, 7 children, and when your kids are down and they're ill and there's just nothing you can do for them, it's a very frustrating situation. And here you're dealing with something that's devastating. This is a disease or an affliction that's going to affect her for the rest of her life. How are you reacting to this? How is your family dealing with this kind of news? And again, kind of chasing this diagnosis. How are you wrapping yourselves around that?
Well, it was horrific. You know, Annabelle's life was pretty much on the couch with a heating pad on her stomach in the fetal position. And she would take, she was on about 10 medications, and she was on medications every 4 hours. And we were going back and forth to Boston from, he was just a brilliant man and helping us and giving us the medication that Annabelle needed. And so she just was distended, and it was hard for her to eat. She just was in agony. And again, in the book, you know, we talk about we all had our own journey, and we all went through so much independent struggle watching her suffer. It was just, as a parent, you want to say, in the morning, your tummy will be better, baby. And we would say, maybe in the morning, maybe tomorrow will be a better day. And that would be our prayer. Let today be better than yesterday. But typically, it's a helpless, horrific feeling. You really are powerless.
talk about your faith. I mean, you said you kind of prayed that this was going to change and that things would be better. Was your family strong in a faith-based religion prior to the events that took place?
We were. Kevin was raised in a solid Christian home, and I was also raised in a solid Christian home. So we came together, and that was just something we always knew that we would be, was grounded in faith, involved in our church. And so we clung very much to our relationship with Christ and prayer. And I kind of struggled a little bit here and there along the way, not really sure what to pray, to be quite honest. And again, I talk about that in the book, and I'm very open about it, that although Kevin remained very steadfast and he clung in prayer, I struggled with really what to pray at that point because it was so hard to watch her suffer. But we did stay very faithful, and I feel like God stayed very faithful to us during that time and that season.
Well, talk to me about that, because that's got to be a tough moment, especially when you're a parent dealing with a child with this type of affliction. How do you rectify that in your brain to, why would God let a child like this suffer? Why would he allow something like this to happen? Is that a faith shaker for you? Was there ever any questioning why this was going on, what kind of God would do this?
I wondered why, and I know that in our minds we want to know the other side of the canvas or the puzzle, or we want to be on the other side. We don't want to be on this side where the pieces are out of order. But I knew that there was an other side. I didn't know that the other side would end up so beautifully placed and written and so well orchestrated. I didn't ever imagine that that's how it would turn out, but I knew that there was a plan on the other side, so I clung to that, although I did not understand why Annabelle, with so much humility and grace and such mercy for a child, would endure so much trial, and it did shake me, and I did struggle, and I didn't understand, and I would cry out to God, just take it away. And I know Kevin cried out, give it to me, God, just give it to me, and let her live, and let her be normal, and let her eat, just let her eat and drink, and let those things we take for granted be okay for her. So it was. We did feel challenged, but we never at all at any moment felt that God wasn't who we knew him to be, if that makes sense.
Sure. And that's what I was asking. I mean, it's tough. I couldn't imagine dealing with something like that, or, children that are dealing with cancer and trying to rectify that. It's such a, it's a challenge. And I guess that's why they call it a test of faith and belief. Yeah. What goes on? I'm curious, with releasing this book, the book, The Boy Who Came Back from Heaven, A Remarkable Account of Miracles, Angels, and Life Beyond This World, was released by Kevin Malarkey back in 2014, or actually I think it was much earlier than that, around 2012 or so. That book came out talking about a boy's journey to heaven and surviving a horrific accident. And now it's come to light that, the father may have made this story up and that it isn't what it was proposed to be. Were you afraid by putting your story together that it might put you under scrutiny and under a microscope to share a story like this?
In all honesty, I never really was. I just felt like it needed to be shared. It's such a message of hope and inspiration and encouragement. And Annabelle inspires me with that because, her response to anyone that has criticism or question or challenge to her just is that, she says, I'm not, shoving it down your throat, is her little phrase. And she says, it is my story. And if you allow it to challenge you, it can change your life and it can make a difference in your relationship with Christ and who you can be and who you will be if you allow this story to change you or to listen to it. But I'm not going to insist that you make it a part of who you are. It's just my story. It's just what happened to me. It's my reality. And so I love that because, I'm not going to force you to believe it, but it is. It happened. It's where Annabelle is the proof that it is real.
Walk me through this. The diagnosis comes in, you guys find out what's going on. Is this something that could potentially be cured with surgery later on in life, with medications? What are they giving you as hopeful options?
Well, there aren't very many hopeful options. You know, at one point they had talked about a colostomy bag for Annabelle. They had talked about G buttons. We had a doctor in the beginning talk to us about Annabelle would need, as time progressed and his life went on, an intestinal transplant. They talked about, you know, having tube feedings at night, which would let her system rest so that her intestines would not have to work so much. You know, really everything they talked to us about was not positive prognosis. It was just understand that as she gets older and as the diagnosis progresses and the disease progresses, then, or the disorder progresses, it will get harder for her. It was not, there is no cure. There is no easy fix. There is no easy answer. It is a horrible, horrible struggle.
All right, let's start to break this down with what happened to her. What was this remarkable journey, and how did it begin? So she's a very ill child, has a very hard time kind of getting anywhere. As you said, most of her life is now spent in the fetal position with a heating pad on her stomach. Walk me through the days leading up to this event. What was going on in her life? How were things changing? What was going on?
Yes, we were in Boston for one of Annabelle's last treatments, and they had admitted her, and it was an unexpected admission. And so I think at that point, Annabelle had just, that was really what broke her. And she talked to me then, and I share about in the book about how she talked about she wanted to die and go to heaven and live with Jesus where there's no more pain. And it just rocked me to my core that this child who did not know anything but fighting was no longer wanting to fight. Well, through some acts of, you know, faithfulness and, you know, God's grace, Annabelle rallied, and we got her home, and she was on the couch. It was late in December 2011, and her older sister, who can be quite persuasive, encouraged her to go out and play, and it was a beautiful December day, and so she did, and they were just out doing what they love to do, and that was climb trees on our property. And so a little bit later, the oldest one comes running in pretty frantic that Annabelle had fallen in the tree. And my mind immediately went to she climbed a little too far and had slipped and had gotten caught maybe between branches and needed help working her way down.
Sure.
So I, you know, went out there, and Abby, the oldest, was dragging me pretty frantic, hysterical. And I got to where she said Anna was. And the youngest was digging at the base of the tree, and so they were little, you know, at that time. And the littlest one was 7, and she was digging frantically at the base of this tree. And I said, "What are you doing, baby?" And she said, "Anna needs air. She can't breathe." And so I kept, okay, what is happening? And they kept screaming, "Anna is in the tree. She's in the tree." So I realized she's not stuck up. She's fallen inside. And so what happened was they were climbing, and they were 30 feet in the air sitting on a branch, and that branch began to give way. And in order to seek safety and get down, Annabelle went inside a hole where a previous branch had broken off, and that hole led to a drop 30 feet inside the hollow-out base of a cottonwood tree. So Annabelle had fallen 30 feet headfirst and was trapped at the base of a hollowed-out cottonwood tree.
Oh, my gosh.
Yeah.
Now, when you get there, is she conscious? Is she aware of what's going on, or are you getting no response?
Well, I could not get up the tree, but I was not quick and agile like Abby was. Abby was still just like a little animal, just racing up that tree. It was crazy, and she was screaming down into Annabelle in the hole, and Annabelle was not responding. Abby said she did hear Anna say, "I can't breathe. There's not any air." Something about there the being no air and her not being able to breathe. And so Abby was hysterical. So, you know, we began to get in, you know, care flight and ambulance, and or Kevin came home and firefighters came and first responders and sheriff's department, and it just becomes a madhouse. And you know, I talk about in the book about the first responders arriving, and they too thought, okay, there's a little girl, she's stuck in a tree, she's, you know, same thing. But then their brains went to, okay, she's in this hole, it's just within arm's reach. Same thing we thought. It can't be fallen. It can't be this massive tree that had bloomed the spring prior and actually the springs after. This dead, hollowed out tree, it can't be hollow all the way to the ground. But it was. So, I mean, everybody went through this point of, okay, she's fallen a little bit. Okay, she's just within arm's reach. Oh, my gosh, she's entombed 30 feet in the ground.
Boy, what a sense of helplessness, right? I mean, that's not a real easy fix. That's, as I said, they can't just reach in or drop a little rope down and help get her out of this. She's 30 feet down inside this hollowed out tree, head first, and having trouble breathing. That's, again, as a parent, I don't know, how do you even begin to deal with that situation and realizing the predicament your daughter's in?
Well, I just remember praying at that time, thinking back about Annabelle saying I wanted to die and go to heaven. I remember thinking, God, don't you take her. Don't you dare do it, and don't you do it now. Don't you dare, don't you dare do it. And, you know, Annabelle had managed to somehow right herself. So when the firefighters were able to see her, she was, again, in like a fetal position, but was not responding, and they couldn't get her to respond and look up to them. She wasn't crying. She wasn't, they couldn't tell if she was alive. They couldn't tell if she had broken bones. They could tell nothing. So it was just a sick feeling of silence. What are they going to do? And they couldn't cut the tree down because it would crumble in on her, and they couldn't get her to respond to get her out. It was sickening.
What's the next point you just bring up? I mean, you can't just tear this thing down. You can't go in it. If it starts to collapse, that is going to seal her doom. What is the effort? What do they do? How do they decide to get her out of here?
So time goes on, and the firefighters were just amazing, and they were continuing to devise a plan after plan after plan, but all of them involved Annabelle in her own rescue. There was no way they could get her out. They couldn't fit a fireman down in the hole. They couldn't, you know, all these possibilities they would flip through, and it ultimately ended in Annabelle being instrumental in her own rescue. But again, they couldn't get her alert, and they continued to yell and yell, and all of a sudden Annabelle came around, and they just started screaming, she's responding, she's responding. And you know, thank God, and I can get chills thinking about it. And she just looked up, and they had lowered a rope, and they were screaming, Annabelle, grab the rope. And she just began to follow very calmly, very peacefully. She never cried. She never yelled. She did every single thing they told her to do with perfect execution and detail. And she absolutely assisted at 9 years old in her own rescue. And they began to pull her up in a system of pulleys with the ladder and these strong, amazing firemen to pull her up out of the hole. And that took them hours, but they did get her up out of the hole.
Hours of going through this. And that, yeah. I mean, that has to be another moment of terrifying, right? I mean, there's just no letting up on what you're dealing with, because you think maybe you've lost your child. You think, if she's not dead, that maybe she's been crippled or paralyzed. Then there's some response, and then that is not even a quick fix. Now we've got to rig up all these pulleys and ropes to get her out of the situation. They're doing this, taking hours to get her out. Are you feeling a sense of calm because of how calm she is, at least at this point, when she's responding?
I am, and it was really eerie. People asked me, you know, was I pacing? Was I frantic? I was kind of pacing back and forth, but the fireman was doing a brilliant job of relaying to us where she was and what was happening. We stayed in the same position on the ground with a flashlight on us. So the fireman, because it's dark now, it's late. It's been 5 hours since she fell in at this point.
5 hours. Okay.
And they've been working for 3 hours to get her out. So at this point, they're telling us, you know, she's talking to us. She seems alert. You know, they're giving us positive feedback.
How long was she actually unconscious? Do you know?
They do not know. We don't really know. We know that for the majority of the time that they were yelling down to her, she was out, and they could not get her to rally. But I don't know. I would really only be guessing to tell you how long she was out. But it would be because she was in there 5 hours, and it took them to get here. It took them getting here. It took them setting up equipment. It took up the,
right.
them, you know, all of that. It was a while, but.
Christy, let's take a quick break. Miracles from Heaven is the name of the book. Christy Beam, our guest. What happens next? This little girl has gone through a traumatic experience. She's already dealing with medical health issues. What happened to this little girl in her journey when she fell through the bottom of that tree? We'll find that out next on Coast to Coast AM. Miracles from Heaven. That's the topic here in the first hour. Christy Wilson Beam, our guest, as she tells us about an amazing story involving her daughter, a near-death experience, and an amazing case of healing. That's what we're discussing this hour. If you've missed any part of the show, don't worry. It's so easy to access. All you have to do is go over to coasttocoastam.com. Become a Coast Insider. For 15 cents a day, you're going to get access to over 5 years of past audio archives. You'll be able to hear every one of the fascinating and amazing guests that have been hosted on Coast to Coast AM. You'll also get access to news, live chats with George Norrie and other hosts of Coast. Also, some of the amazing guests do live chats right there on the site. That's just part of what you get. Go check it out, coasttocoastam.com. Become an insider right now and find out why it's the number one overnight talk radio show. I'm your host this evening, Dave Schrader. I'm the host of Darkness Radio, which is a paranormal-themed radio show Monday through Friday based in Minneapolis, St. Paul. We are darknessradio.com. You can listen to the show through a live stream right off of our site. And the best part, as soon as Darkness Radio ends, you can stay tuned because George Norrie and Coast to Coast continues your journey into the strange and unusual world around us. Check that out. You can also join our live chat room, which goes on during our show and right now during Coast to Coast AM. While I'm hosting, go over to darknessradio.com, sign in using your Twitter, Facebook, or just as a guest, and you could become part of a lively discussion and debate and be there with other like-minded individuals. It's free, it's easy, plus you can see all the other great information we have on our website. Check that out, darknessradio.com. When we return, we're going to find out what happened to Annabelle after she was pulled out of this tree after a devastating fall that could have ended her life. What happened to this little girl and what led to a miraculous healing? That's what we cover next on Coast to Coast AM. We are back. All right, Christy, let's talk about what happens next in this story. What a remarkable tale. Unfortunately, your daughter had been diagnosed at a very early age with an incurable digestive issues and stomach problems, which is going to lead to years of pain and issues for her. She goes out with her sister to play. They're climbing through a tree. She falls through the center of this old tree, head first, 30-foot drop, is unconscious for hours. And while firefighters and emergency technicians are there on the spot trying to help her get out, she finally rouses and is able to grab the rope. And after hours, they finally remove her from this tree. What are the thoughts as this going on? Have they got any idea, any visual on her bleeding, anything coming through? Is she explaining anything broken, or what is she giving to the EMTs and the firefighters at that point?
They were yelling down to us, you know, she's coherent, she's communicating, you know, they wouldn't let us know any assessment other than just that she's talking, she's aware, you know, of where she is. But the medical team on the ground were saying, we don't want to alarm you, but we do want to prepare you that we have never had anybody fall 30 feet and not suffer paralysis or broken bones. As soon as we get hands on her, we're going to strap her to the backboard and get her, you know, immediately stabilized. And, I mean, they did. I mean, she came up out of the tree, and she took a big, deep breath of fresh air, and she just kind of tucked her hair behind her ears and just kind of took in that all these people were staring at her, and Kevin was screaming, Mommy and Daddy are here, we're here, we're here, shining a light on us. And she just looked at us and was so peaceful. I mean, it was just weird, almost just like this huge ordeal was okay. I mean, it was just crazy. And then they just whisked her down in the way, and and they put her on the board, and they put her in the ambulance, and then she and I and the care flight team jumped in the helicopter, and off we went. And it was all just a whirlwind, just a crazy whirlwind.
But at this point, they've got to be poking fingers and toes and trying to make sure everything is fine. Is she responding as though there's no long-term effect?
Well, she is. All I hear them saying is, please stop moving, Anna. And Anna says, but I can't see the lights. And there's, you know, they say, we know, baby, you want to see the lights, but you can't, you know, you can't move your head like that. You can't move your body like that. And, you know, she's just trying to be a child, and they're restraining her. So, you know, she's speaking clearly. She's asking questions. She's, you know, in the book, we talk about the dialogue that goes back and forth about, you know, the IV that they're placing in her in the helicopter. And, you know, even when she's just so alert and fine. She just seems fine. And again, we get to the emergency room, we land, they whisk her away, and the ER doctor tells me, you know, you need to be prepared. I know she seems fine, but they think that. They did say on the ground, now that I back up, that they thought she'd ruptured her spleen. They thought that her spleen was possibly ruptured, or there was some internal damage. They did say that. And I don't know why. I don't know why they felt that. But maybe there was some, because of her belly issues and her intestinal disorder. I don't know. But I know that they, for some reason, thought that. So they pursued that through testing and all this. I mean, they did sonograms and x-rays and CAT scans, and they did everything.
Now, is she speaking at this time about heaven, about a near-death experience, or is she just acting like a normal kid, wide awake, and just wondering what's going on and kind of caught up in the moment?
She has not said a word about the heaven experience at this point. She is just a child, and she is just taking it, you know, she's just... We slipped back into hospital mode. This is what we do when we're in a hospital. This is
right.
How things go. You know, it was just, we just slipped into what was normal for us, which was crisis hospital mode, unfortunately. So she wasn't doing anything other than, okay, here's my arm. Okay, don't move. Okay, why are you holding my head for so long? Why can't I move? You know, she wasn't saying anything about being inside the tree.
All right. Now walk me through when she starts to talk about this. Is it later that day? Is it days or weeks later? How does she broach the subject with you of her heavenly experience?
Well, they stayed the night. They kept her overnight because they couldn't find anything wrong with her from the fall. She walked away from the fall literally with scratches and bruises, and she was wet and muddy. There was no paralysis, no broken bones. There was nothing wrong with her from a 30-foot fall. They felt like there was a minor concussion, and they still weren't totally okay with letting her go for the night because of the major incident that had happened. So they did keep her overnight. Released us the next day, and we're driving down the road, and she just looks at me out of the blue. We've been driving, and the truck was quiet, and she just turned to me and said out of the blue, "You know, Mommy, I went to heaven when I was in that tree." And I just... was stunned. I just looked at her, and I've said over and over now, I look back and wish that I had said something so brilliant and profound, but I didn't. All that came out of my mouth was, really? I mean, I couldn't think of anything amazing or wonderful or powerful, or, you know, I just said, really? I mean, I just, it's so silly, but that's what I said. And she just began to just share about what happened and how she said she went to heaven and sat on Jesus' lap. And she told him she wanted to stay because there was no pain there. She didn't hurt anymore. And he said, "I know you want to stay, Annabelle, but I have plans for you on earth that you cannot fulfill in heaven. And the firefighters are going to get you out. And when they do, there will be nothing wrong with you." And... when she told me that, I said, you know, God is so good. There was nothing wrong with you from that fall. It's a miracle that you walked away with nothing wrong with you from that fall. And that's what in my short sight in mind, I thought she meant, but it wasn't.
Wow. Did she mention, were there friends or relatives there, or was it just her and Jesus speaking?
She said that the way she knew she was in heaven was that she saw her Mimi, and that was Kevin's dad's mom, and she saw her, and she said she looked much younger, but she said it was her. And then I guess at that point she was with Jesus, and she said she saw a little girl, and she said that she looked just like Abby and myself. And she said, I thought in my brain, I know that little girl from somewhere. And I asked God, who is that little girl? And he said, Annabelle, that's your sister, which just blew me away. Because the story with that is, we'd had a precious friend who had a miscarriage, and the girls were devastated by it. And I said, you know, this sweet friend will be okay. It's a terrible, terrible thing that happens. But Mommy went through it two times before, you know, I had Annabelle. So if Mommy went through it two times and then God blessed us with Annabelle and Adeline, you know, it doesn't mean that our sweet friend won't go on to have more children. So that was all I ever said to them about that. And when Annabelle told me that there was a little girl in heaven, it almost solidified it for me. And the reason is, I did have two miscarriages, but only one of them was a viable pregnancy. The other one was what's called a blighted ovum, and life is never created. And I never explained that to the girls. So Annabelle didn't know that there weren't two babies miscarried. She just, does that make sense?
Right. No, I totally understand that. Sure. So one was viable. The other one never really had the spark of life.
Exactly.
So there would have only been one sister that would have been a part of that. Wow. So here you're getting some very interesting validation from her, information that she shouldn't know or really understand to explain. And she explains this to you, and she's seeing loved ones that are there. Is she coming back with any messages for you from these people, or from, you know, relatives like that? Or is this basically just about what she was hearing from Jesus?
Exactly. She didn't speak with them. She didn't hear anything from them. She didn't get messages from them. It was just what he said to her and what she said to him. And she did say that he said, it is time for you to go, but I'm going to send my guardian angel, or your guardian angel, excuse me, to be with you and to light the tree for you. And he said, everything's going to be okay, and she's going to light the tree. Well, Annabelle said she began to wake up and hear the firemen's voices calling her from very far away, and that the angel was small, like the body of like the size of a fairy. And she said that the angel was solid, and then it became transparent or clear. She said clear. And then she said God winked at her through the body of the angel. And she said, and what he meant was, I'm leaving you now, but everything's going to be okay. And then he went away, Mommy. And I said, well, did you talk to the angel? And she said, no, we just sat there peacefully together. I mean, she was nine. We just sat there peacefully together. And then later, fast forwarding, the firemen, they were like, that makes so much sense. We couldn't understand why she was so calm. She was eerie calm. Like, it was weird. She was not crying out. She wasn't asking for her mommy. You know, she was in such a traumatic place and situation, and she was so peaceful.
Because she wasn't alone. She had somebody there holding her and helping her. Now, some people that have had these near-death experiences and have been to heaven, when they come back, they also report kind of moments of depression, almost feeling like they wish they could go back. Did that ever happen for her?
There was a moment right after that where Annabelle was very, it did scare us, because she took some risks that were almost like she had no fear. She wasn't afraid if something bad did happen to her. And it terrified us, because we thought she's okay dying. And it did scare us. But it was only about 2 or 3 days. I mean, we watched her like hawks, and she was just taking really scary risks. And if she was out of our line of sight, she was climbing again. And just scary things. And so, but after we talked to her and we, you know, let her know, you're not going anywhere. You're here, sister. You have a plan. You know, she became very happy and peaceful and bright, and she never, ever talked about dying again. She never, ever talked about, you know, wanting her life to be over again. But she also started feeling better, and she started getting well.
And how quickly does this happen? I mean, she's back from this near-death experience. She's gone through the hospital. They've checked her out. She's fine. When does the healing begin?
So really, you know, I have documented where a month later, I called the nurse for one of her specialists and said, you know, it's time for Annabelle to take one of her major medications because she would round on and off of them. And it was time for her to round on. And I said, but, you know, she's not showing any of the symptoms that she needs this powerful medicine. And I really hate to give it to her. And the nurse was like, well, you don't have to give it to her now, but she's probably going to start showing symptoms. So if you want to delay a bit, you can, but you're going to need to give it to her eventually. Well, she never, ever needed that medication ever again. And we ended up dropping it off. And then every day she just was playing more and happier and eating and needed less pain medicine. And she just was different. And so we began to drop one more medication and one more medication and one more medication. And today Annabelle is on zero medications, and she has been released from the care of her pediatric gastroenterology specialist. And we don't go to Boston anymore. And Annabelle doesn't talk about wanting to die anymore. And she eats everything and anything, and she's completely healed.
What do the doctors make of this? I mean, how are they dealing with this and explaining what's happened?
You know, they don't know. One of them said jokingly, you know, I sure am glad she fell in that tree. They are just brilliant, precious, amazing men. They just do such, they just are such amazing men. And they are just so happy for Annabelle. They can't explain it. They don't understand it. But they just say that she's asymptomatic, that she's on zero medications, that she doesn't need their care. They just don't know. They can only identify the facts, which are that she's fine. They don't know. It's crazy.
And do they do any kind of internal looking to see if any of this is still scarred or any issues? Or is it simply just by the fact she has none of the maladies or the issues anymore with the pain and complaints?
Correct. It's basically because what they have to do to determine if you have these disorders and if you have problems are so invasive, and it almost all requires putting them to sleep and placing probes, manometry testing, where they place probes throughout your intestines and your stomach, and it's just very, very trying and awful. And so they would not have any medical cause to do that anymore, so they wouldn't want to do that. So there is no reason to do any testing because she doesn't show any need. Does that make sense? So it's
no doubt, totally.
Yeah.
Wow, that's incredible to have that kind of response and that kind of healing go on. That you, as a parent, you have to feel truly blessed for the gift that of her life being spared of major injury from paralysis, and then on top of it, getting that. And I'm just curious, we've just got a few minutes left. Was there any other changes in her personality, anything else that was not like Annabelle before, aside from the medical maladies? Was there any other changes that you noticed about her?
You know, that is such a great question, because although Annabelle was only 9, she did suffer so much. Maybe this happened, but we didn't get to see it because she was in such a dark place. But Annabelle, you know, people talk about someone having an old soul. I get what that means now. She is, she has an understanding and an awareness about death and about what happens when you die. And for example, our youth pastor was tragically killed, and it was horrific, and everybody was devastated, and he was just an amazing man with an amazing family, and all of our whole family was very upset, and we shared with them when the event happened, and all the girls were upset, but Annabelle just looked at me and just very calmly, she just said, you know, do you think, because we had some other, let me back up, we had some other deaths, and it was, seemed to be a lot of people were passing away, and Anna just looked at me very calmly, and she said, do you think that, what did she say? It was something about the end of time coming, and she said, and do you think that God is calling his precious ones home one by one? And I just looked at her, and I said, I don't know, Annabelle. I don't know how to answer that question. And she said, okay, well, he's okay. He's in a great place. He's okay. And, you know, death is hard for those of us that are here, really. It's not hard for those that are gone.
Thank you so much, Christy. We've got to go. I appreciate it. We've only scratched the surface. Miracles from Heaven. Pick up the book. It's out and available. We will be back with a skeptic's view of the Project Stargate right here on Coast to Coast AM.